are entering the Long Island week, and we have a special Long Island guest, Tom Schrock. Dylan, how was practice this evening?
It was good. Well, thanks for having me on. And it was rainy. We're dealing with some thunderstorms, so we hung out for a little bit, did some stretching, like under some awning, and then we actually had a pretty good practice. So it was good. A nice gritty night here on Long Island.
You know, and like you said before we started here, you're basically 5 minutes from home. How pumped are you for this weekend? You know, getting to play two games in front of your hometown crowd.
Yeah, no, it'll be awesome. It's funny, you know, staying at the hotel. You know, I feel like the minute I moved out of my parents' house a couple of years back, that my room is gone. My whole childhood, like they ripped it out. It's like they got a Peloton and my sister's doing yoga up there. It's crazy. But that aside, obviously still cranky about it. It's always really cool playing at Hofstra. It's like, I played my first college game here. I played a bunch of like high school championships, and I grew up like a complete lax rat. So I was at all the Lizards games. I watched a ton of Hofstra games. So I'm familiar with the stadium, and I've always had a really good time there. And, you know, I'm pretty lucky. I have like a ton of support, friends, family, everybody's coming out. You know, they used to come to the Lizards games, and now with the PLL, there's just a ton of excitement. Archers are off to a hot start. So, I know everyone's really excited, and it's always been cool to play in front of, you know, the people who've been around me for a long time and supported me. So it's always a good time.
And we're kind of going to go around the horn here with questions, and I'll start with just, you know, from the great start and a little bit about practice. Just, I don't know, it feels like you guys have more fun than any team out there. Can you walk me through the vibe of the locker room, you know, the chemistry between the guys, and why that contributes to your guys' success?
Yeah, I mean, I think like when you're having success, it also like is a little bit more fun. So I feel like the two kind of like feed one another, but we just have a good core group, you know, and I think a lot of the teams do. We're successful right now, so it's that much more fun. But, you know, I think the vibe around the locker rooms, like a lot of us were friends before the Archers even existed, which I think is important. You know, and I think coach like put a lot of stock in bringing in guys who were the right guys. You know, if you look around the league, you know, you saw it last week, like Chrome was winless at the time. The Whips like hadn't lost in 10 years or whatever it was. That's what it felt like. I think it just speaks to like, you know, every team is loaded, you know, especially this year, you know, after, you know, a stacked college draft class, after the merger, right? Like there's no easy games, and any team could beat anybody any week. So I think it, you know, becomes that much more important that you have that, obviously the chemistry on the field, but you have a pretty tight knit group of guys, and we're lucky to have that. And I think coach has been pretty intentional around, you know, who he brings in the last couple of years. And I think, you know, he's hit on a lot of his draft picks, and not only on the field, but guys that are kind of contributing to our culture. And it's year three. This point, we have a core group that have been here for all 3 years, but I think just about everybody we've added, you know, has added something positive, you know, and that includes guys, you know, like Joey Sankey, who, you know, is no longer on our roster, but had a huge role in like building what we're all about. So, you know, I'm thankful for the guys that we play with. And I think, you know, just being friends with the guys and getting along and being on the same page about, you know, being unselfish and, you know, just kind of hustling around and making, you know, those heart and hustle plays, I think is huge. And I think we're just very much aligned across the board. And I think it's translated to some success on the field as well.
Yeah, Tom, I think I could ask you about the confidence and swagger you guys are playing with after week three here, but you come here for the hard-hitting questions at the Inside Lacrosse Happy Hour podcast. So I'll ask this. How much further do you think you would have gotten on the American Ninja Warrior challenge than Rupnell?
Oh, man. And I showed up late for this podcast. You guys are getting a little extra booze in you too. So I'm expecting all these the hard hitting questions here. Man, I don't know. I feel like Pinnell is a pretty good choice, you know, across the board. You know, I think he'd do better with another shot. You know, I think Rob like has all the tools to be successful in an American Ninja Warrior. So, you know, I'd compete. I'd give it all I got out there. I don't know. Not all that experienced, you know, I used to tear it up on the jungle gym back in the playground when I was a kid. So maybe that would translate to some success. But I feel like Rob is like, can probably do way more pull-ups than me, and is probably in good shape there. But I've been training grip strength my whole life, so maybe that can kind of help me out. So I don't know. I'd be interested if you could talk to somebody, get me a shot, you know, out there, I could see how we could do. But I feel like Rob was a pretty good representative for us. But you know, I think I could do okay. We'll see.
So now, since Rob has already been on Ninja Warrior, is there a game show you feel like would be more in your wheelhouse? Like, could we get you on American Idol? Would you be more of a Survivor kind of person? Where do we send you?
No, keep it simple. Family Feud. That's I'd flourish on Family Feud.
Feud with Archer's teammates. Who's going with you?
Ryan Ambler for sure. Mainly because he let me use his laptop for this. So I owe him. I'm taking him with me. And he's chock full of facts. He's super smart. Matt McMahon, he's my neighbor back at home. Spent a lot of time together. I feel like he would also perform really well. And under the radar pick here, Graham Hossick is just chock full of knowledge in very like random categories, which I feel like could be a pretty big asset for us in Family Feud. Is that it? Is it four? Or is there another spot?
Yeah, I think it's four.
I think there's one more.
If there's another one, it's Coach Tony Resch for sure. You know, I think he's one of the smartest human beings I've ever been around. And I think that wisdom and that experience would really go a long way for us to take home the 20K from the feud.
Family Feud, like, it only matters if you win the last round, right? Like, isn't Family Feud like the whole game show is a hoax and then whoever wins the last round goes to the final?
I think it's heavily weighted to the end. So it's not how you start, it's how you finish, which is important. And then you get like the lightning round or whatever, which, you know, I'd probably throw Ryan and Dresch out there if I had the choice. And I think that's where you can make even more money. But I might be wrong. I'm usually a little, you know, I'm not paying full attention to the feud when I got it on there, but it does look like it would be a blast.
Good theme for the season though, to finish stronger.
100%. Doesn't, I mean, nobody remembers if, you know, we're 3-0. If we don't get it done at the end, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Well, that's a good follow-up question in terms of, like, you know, you've been on a lot of teams, like a lot of teams that have, like, you know, you've been on both sides of it, you know, teams that have been really good for 75% of the year and, you know, didn't finish it out, or, you know, Ohio Machine, you guys did finish it out. What is, like, what's the difference there? How do you end up on the right side of it in terms of, like, you know, being the team that can keep consistency through an entire season?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like continuing to evolve, right? Continuing to get better. Like, the pro lacrosse is so unique in that, like, you play against these guys so often. Yeah, you know, now we're at eight teams. You know, I've played in MLL, I think, when there was less than that, a couple more. The PLL was six teams at one point. But, you know, my point is just, like, you're very familiar with everybody. So I think the more you can evolve as a team, schematically and like kind of how you attack offensively and, you know, kind of working some new guys in and bringing in some new looks, I think that stuff is really important. Obviously peaking at the right time, you know, and that one's tough to solve. I think if there was a perfect recipe for that, everybody would do it. But I think a lot of that comes with, like, you know, kind of the makeup of your team and who's a part of it. You know, that machine team, for example, like, just a really strong culture and a really tight knit crew. And like, you look at the PLL the last few years, like, obviously the Whips have had that, you know, it's kind of ingrained from the Terp days, but those guys also, you know, I played with a lot of them on the US team and other, you know, games, whatever, summer league growing up. And, you know, that's a pretty strong group of guys. So I think, you know, you got to have it on field, but I think you have to have the right crew off the field too. And I think we're in a pretty good spot there. But, you know, to the original point of this question, like, I'm glad we're off to a hot start, but it only really matters if we continue it and continue to get better and like peak at the right time. So, a la Family Feud, you know, it's not about the start. It's all about how we wrap this thing up. So hopefully we can accomplish that.
You mentioned Lizards games at the beginning. What's your favorite Lizards memory growing up?
Oof. I mean, there's a lot. I used to like my, so my uncle reffed a lot of the MLL games. So I was always like around, like I was either like a water boy or picking up like, you know, trash after the games just to like meet the guys. I think it's hard to pick a specific memory, but I think I was really lucky as a kid. I'm like probably one of the few that always wanted to be a pro lacrosse player, mainly just because I had like a lot of those guys like around me when I was a kid. And it was like the guys from other teams, guys on the Lizards. Just looking up to those guys and being around them and being that close to the game and seeing how fast and strong and how great that lacrosse was just really cool for me. So it's tough to pick an exact moment. You know, they won, you know, a few championships, but I love every second of it. It was just awesome to be around it. They played at Mitchell Field for a few years, at Hofstra a few years, but I feel like I was at the majority of those games. So I had one Saints game, which is right, you know, right 100 yards from me right now. I had my birthday party there, and my friend and I got to go shoot on like the mascot, and I shanked it. I missed the goal. I felt like my dad was never going to talk to me again. He didn't care at all, but I was nervous coming back up the steps. I feel like I blew it. You know, I was working so hard my whole life to like be a good lacrosse player. And, you know, my first time in front of everybody, I shanked it. And then my buddy tried to shoot it behind the back, and I don't think it even made it to the goal, and they booed him off the, off the turf, which was pretty funny. So, an embarrassing moment, but that was pretty memorable. But, you know, I was around a lot of pro lacrosse, a lot of like high level college and stuff from a young age. And, it inspired me. You know, I always kind of wanted to do this, and, you know, it's pretty cool to be able to come back to Hofstra in particular and play.
A lot of bringing water to the penalty box to Brian Spleena.
Yeah. You know, I saw the graphic of like the penalty minutes, and like, it's not even close. You know, I forget what it is, but it's, I'm not shocked, but yeah, I mean, I used to love watching him because like my uncle was the ref, you know, and he did like all those Lizards games. It was always him calling the penalties, and like, you know, I'm sure Brian Spleena certainly had some words with him at times, but they like had an understanding. And like, even at a young age, like I had a lot of respect for it, you know, like they could kind of go at each other. And but at the end, it was kind of like all respect. And you kind of see that with Matty Palem in the PLL too, right? Like, he can kind of take a beating, but, you know, he'll throw his arm around you after the game, which I think, yeah, that's the way it should be. You know, the NLL is like that too. So I'd like to see some more like player to ref, like mutual respect, you know, kind of leave it on the field sort of thing. And I don't think anybody did that better than Brian Spleena, at least my uncle.
So, you know, you just mentioned the NLL there a little bit, and having, you know, watched you play in both leagues now, do you feel like the NLL is kind of influencing your PLL performance? Like, your kind of offensive skill set's changing a little bit?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think like little things, just like what I would do in certain situations, like I'm probably like tucking my stick a little more than, you know, I would have in the past, like definitely twisting the ball and, you know, kind of finding different release points. And, I think I've tried to, I haven't really been all that physical in the NLL, like with the ball on my stick. I kind of thought that would happen. It just like hasn't yet, but I'd like to, you know, I've been pretty intentional about trying to add that to my field game. And, you know, I've been working on it this off season. And I think in the NLL, I'm definitely gonna, you know, I feel like we haven't played in quite a while, but, you know, hopefully everything goes according to plan this winter. And, you know, I'd like to like kind of have a little bit more of like a post-up game. Feel like it'll probably extend my career as I slow down a little bit too. So definitely want to, you know, it's a lot like, you know, the question, Matt, that you asked before. It's like kind of adding new layers to my game. Like, every year is kind of my off season goal. And, you know, I think box lacrosse has certainly like contributed to that with, you know, just speed of your reaction, being comfortable, like in tight, you know, different release points, and it just like helps slow the game down. So I do think there's a lot of benefits, and it's, you know, it's been fun, and I can't wait, you know, for it to come back. It's been a while.
Tom, you said something about, you know, you're one of the few guys who kind of grew up wanting to be a pro lacrosse player, you know, and you're in that you know, group that's, you know, made a career out of lacrosse. How, and you're kind of also crossing this threshold of, you know, you're not necessarily early career now, you're not late career, you're somewhere like mid career, been around for a little bit. How have you seen it evolve? Particularly, you know, obviously the MLL, and you were very much involved with PLL getting to kind of seen that grow there. But just this aspect of being a pro lacrosse player, how have you seen that grow and evolve over your career?
Yeah, I mean, a lot. And I've had like a lot of different experiences with it. I'd say like the player buy-in, you know, at the top levels, like has the commitment's always been there. And I think like a lot of people, you know, don't realize that, like, you know, when we were playing in MLL, like the guys, you know, despite a larger percentage of guys having other jobs than they do now, like the buy-in and the commitment was always there. I think, that's what I felt on our team, at least. I think what the PLL did was just kind of, you know, elevate how competitive each spot was, you know, and if you weren't committed, like you kind of weren't going to get a spot. And, you know, it's hard to compare the two, but I think like the kind of elevation of the pro game has been interesting. And the kind of audience, you know, with the PLL, you know, and you could point to a million different, you know, reasons, you know, I think it's just been really fun to be a part of like the growth. You know, and it's hard to quantify exactly what that is, but I think like being a part of like something new, exciting, something that's continuing to grow and, you know, has been a lot of fun. And I think like playing in different atmospheres, the tour is fun as a player, you know, going to different places, different markets, like the energy every week, you know, regardless of crowd size, right? Like if you have, you know, an amazing atmosphere at Hopkins, and, you know, I think we'll see similar here at Hofstra. Like it's just, it's cool to be a part of that. TV element's fun. You know, I've just seen like anecdotally, like the buy-in from people my age, my friends, you know, my family, like they're into it. They're, you know, asking me questions about it. Like, what are we thinking about this upcoming game? And that's been a cool evolution as a player. You know, I think the level of play is always, like I said, always been really high. You know, I think the stakes are maybe a little bit higher, and I think that's led to, you know, an increase in competition or whatever, but seeing that angle has been fun. And then, you know, kind of diving into the NLL in like a very like Canadian market, you know, that hasn't had like a ton of American guys go up there, was like a journey in and of itself. Like I had no intention of ever playing box lacrosse and got like a random call and decided to give it a shot. And, you know, next thing I know, I'm like playing lacrosse in Saskatoon on a, you know, Friday night. And like, I'm like, how did I get here? And like, so I've seen it from a lot of different angles. And, you know, to your point in the question, like I always kind of wanted this, and, you know, it was always about just playing at the highest level for me. And I think it's been very cool to be able to be a part of that, you know, in the box game, to go from MLL to the PLL. And, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, I'm right in the middle of my career, like you said, and, you know, I think it can continue to evolve from here. And I'm excited about it, and it's been a ton of fun. You know, I frankly didn't think it would be like this, and, you know, I'm thankful for it, and I'm glad I'm on a great team, two great teams that I really like and can compete for a championship. So hopefully we're just getting started too, so we'll see.
Before you reach the pro level here, you're a big star at Princeton, and today, or yesterday, I guess, for when listeners get this, July 1st is when name, image, and likeness pass for student-athletes in college. If one endorsement, besides Epic, wanted to partner with Tom Schreiber in the Princeton days, who would you want to endorse?
Oh man, Matt, you'll like this. I was so heavy into like Pearl Jam and grunge. I would have said no to everybody. I wouldn't have sold out to anyone. Like when I was in college, I had a flannel shirt on every day. Like I would have said no to everybody. but it is interesting time now. I don't know. It's going to be crazy. It's already pretty crazy. Like just a day in and seeing, you know, what's going on. I'm interested to see who kind of sticks to their guns, you know, and like, you know, keep some soul behind what they got going on. I'm half joking, but in college I wouldn't have taken a dime. I don't think I could have done it. Unless I used whatever the product was every day. No, that's a tough question. I don't know. Back then, probably like the local like Italian place.
Yeah. Like how often do you say to people like, you know, hey, what do you do for a living? And you're like, I'm a pro lacrosse player.
Oof.
What happens after that?
On my spiel for years. It's like a complicated question, but I've always started with that. I've like never, you know, like I've never like been ashamed of that ever. But it is, it does open up a can of worms because it's like, oh, well, you know, especially when there was two leagues, two field leagues. And I was like, well, there's two leagues. Like I played in this, but now I play in this. I also play like hockey, lacrosse, not on skates in Canada. And in the Olympics, there's like a different version of it. Oh yeah. And there's women's lacrosse too. So it's like, it does get like a little complicated. And then the question that's always tough, it's like, oh, where's your team out of? I'm like, we're the circus, man. Like we're on the road. Like we're not tied to anywhere. But it is fun. Like to my, like I was saying before, like it's cool bouncing around. And you know, I've never played in my home market in MLL or NLL, so I don't really know what it's like. Maybe it's amazing. But I do like, you know, the tour is fun just because it's like it's the only time you're there, and the energy and the atmosphere around it is usually pretty solid and pretty energized. So it's been cool.
I'll bring it back to the games. You know, you're preparing for two games in one weekend. You know, I'm imagining something you did in NLL with the way that the schedule was. But what is it like? How does it change your guys' approach?
I mean, I think like you can't really look past the first one at all. I mean, I think you have to be like pretty intentional about recovery. And nowadays it's like, it's crazy how many resources there are, like cold tub, hot tub, like the recovery boots, like the massage guns, all that stuff, like hydrating, eating right. So I think it's more about, you know, like our team being pretty organized about like, what do we do after the game? How do we spend Saturday? How do we make sure we get enough sleep? You know, and turning it around mentally for Sunday. But I think you kind of have to just be aware that, you know, you have that day and a quarter or whatever between the two games and just make the most out of it. But like, I think the worst thing you could do is look past the first one. So I think we're just focused on that one. You know, these rosters are slim, like 19 guys, like everybody's playing a fair amount. So I think it's just about being really proactive after the game and, you know, the game in between. Some of those NLL ones, like you don't even have time. You know, I think I've like played games in Toronto on a Friday night and Georgia on a Saturday. And it's just like, you get off the flight, try to get a quick nap in, and you're at the arena, and it's crazy. A lot of like the vets in the NLL are like, yeah, I love it. Cause like, you're like warmed up. Like sometimes like mentally, like you're a little sharper. I don't know about that, but maybe those guys tell themselves that, and I guess it works. But, you know, I think the bubble was also, you know, good experience for everybody. Right. Cause that was kind of a grind. The World Games is another one where it's just like, you know, it's game after game after game. And, you know, you kind of have to get used to that. You know, and like training wise, I think the nature of the game, it's so fast. You kind of have to be in good shape and you have to be like kind of ready to recover. And, you know, and the last thing I would say is like games are significantly shorter than a college game and an MLL game, you know, 12-minute quarters, you know, going from 15 to 12, like it's a lot shorter, field's a little shorter. So you might be covering a little less mileage. So, it's doable, but I think like you have to be like super proactive and make the most out of that time in between.
Now you guys are, I feel like a bunch of nice guys on the Archers, especially you, you're known as a big, nice guy around the league. So is your teammate Will Manny, and he's he's been bringing out the celebrations and then some this season. First, what's been your favorite, and can we expect any celebrations maybe after another Around the World this weekend?
I don't think I've ever been all that intentional about, like, not celebrating. I just think nothing happens. You know, it's, like, nothing comes to mind. So I don't know if that's, like, on purpose or not. And Will, man, I don't know. Something's gotten into him. You know, I was asking him today. I was like, man, what's got you so angry? Like, what's going on? So I don't know. I mean, I think he's part, you know, I watched, like, the interview or whatever that he said, like, everybody kind of does this, and he's sick of kind of just being on the receiving end of it. You know, and it's kind of like everybody's style, you know, like, some guys talk, some guys don't. You know, I think with, like, the mics being around and, you know, some more cameras around, it's certainly, like, some guys have done a little more of it than they've done in the past. And, you know, I think what you have with Will, I think it's, like, pretty intentional, and I think it, like, fires him up. He's been playing great. And I think, like, it helps him kind of mentally. You know, that's just my take on it. But as far, you know, as it goes for me personally, it's like, I don't think it's going to come out anytime soon for me. But it's more of just, like, nothing comes to mind. You know, like, I would, like, I'm not going to, like, you know, try to hold back. It's just, like, nothing really comes to mind after something happens. Like, everyone, you get, like, a fist pump, but I don't really have too much in the tank there for any of the sellies. I'll leave it to those guys.
So I wanted to ask about another one of your attack teammates down there. Grant Amon. Second year, first full year, you know, you had him for the bubble. Obviously, he's off to a great start this season, just dishing the ball left and right to everybody. Have you noticed kind of a sort of a next step evolution in his game, getting this full season? And what's it been like using a quarterback who's, you know, essentially still kind of one of the new guys on the team?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first part of it is, like, he's just very hungry. Like, he wants to be great, and you kind of get that, like, from day one, like, before I even met him. You know, like, the bubble last year is such a unique time. It's like, you know, I couldn't even go down to Philly and, like, hang out with Grant to get to know him, like, back in last June. Like, things are pretty locked down. So, like, I met him in Utah for the first time, but, you know, I had talked with him on the phone, you know, 20 times for it. And advice that I tried to, like, give him was just, like, hey, be confident, do your thing. Like, you're number one overall pick. Like, you're, like, an incredible player. Just go and do what you did in college. Like, don't hold back, like, for anybody else's sake. And I don't think he did. I think he was great as a rookie. I think he was super poised, made a lot of plays, but I think you're just seeing, like, the next step with him. And something that, you know, I've been really impressed that, you know, may not shine through is his preparation is off the charts. Like, he watches a ton of film. You know, he obviously, like, can execute on this stuff on the field. Like, his stick work's amazing, his quickness. Like, but I think what you're seeing with year two of Grant is just, like I said, he's super hungry and wants to get better. You know, and it shines through immediately when you meet him. But what I think really makes him special is not only his ability to kind of execute all this stuff on the field. Like, he obviously, like, has all these different passing angles, and he sees everything, and his passes are, like, right in the money, and he could score. He's an underrated scorer, but it's his preparation, you know? And I think you see a little bit more of that in a week by week season when he has that much time. Like, he's super, like, articulate with, you know, how defenses move, and, like, he can, you know, understand it and kind of help relay that to his teammates. And that's been really impressive to me. Like, he's, for a young guy, like, for him to have that kind of command, it has been really impressive. And, you know, like I said, he can kind of execute any play that you need him to make out there. So, and the second part of the question, I think he's, you know, he's a pretty confident dude, and, you know, knowledge of the game, he can kind of speak through it. You know, it doesn't feel like Grant's at it only in his second year. Like, he feels a lot more, you know, like, he has a lot more experience. And I think, you know, that lends itself well to his role on the team and how he's done so far.
So this weekend, Hof Schubert Stadium on Long Island, we have Archers versus Chrome, Friday night, 7 o'clock. Archers were is kind of the big matchup that everyone's talking about. The two, you know, seems like the heavyweights in the league, 12:30 p.m. on 4th of July. That's on NBC Sports Network. Tom, I'm going to leave you a question. You know, we put you on the cover of the magazine and said best in the world. You know, I don't necessarily think you you were very humble when we called you that. What is it when people call you, what's your reaction to that? And then kind of the second part to that is, what is the next step for Tom Schreiber in your game to become even better?
I think the answer to both questions is pretty similar. Like, one, I just, like, I haven't thought about it all that much. Like, it's, you know, I guess you could say that's like a goal, but it's, you know, whether you're like ranked that or called that, like, it doesn't really change like how you've played, you know, and the things that you kind of have to work on. Like, it's definitely cool, like, you know, to be in that conversation. Like, it's like an honor, and like, I'm definitely, you know, thankful and grateful and like pumped to, you know, be a part of that. But at the end of the day, it's like, whether, you know, this guy or this guy is considered like the best. And, you know, I think like we live in the world of like the greatest in the world of like everything. So one, like in the most respectful way possible, like, I just don't really care. And two, it's like, how can you get better? And it's like, it's so like, how could you compare, you know, like Lyle Thompson to, you know, like Tucker Durkin, like who's a better lacrosse player? Like there's just like different ways of doing it, you know, and like Zed and Rambo are such different players, and like they bring such like different things to the game. And I think like, you know, there are arguments to be made for like a lot more guys, and like maybe he's the best shooter, maybe he's the best dodger, but at the end of the day, like the approach that I've always taken is like, how can I just get like a little bit better every year, you know, and as I get older too, like how can I get like a little savvier, like we talked about, like being a little more physical and like kind of slowing down as a dodger a little bit and having that element to my game. Like that's just kind of the approach that I've always taken, you know, but at the end of the day, like, you know, I was, you know, pumped to, you know, be a part of that, you know, whenever that was. And, you know, always, you know, kind of want to, if I'm getting the best out of myself, like I think I have the potential to like be in that conversation. But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, it's kind of about me and like, how am I going to just get better, you know, myself? And it doesn't matter if, you know, that's like bestowed upon me or not, you know, it remains the same, like what I have to work on to get better and kind of year over year, you know, it's like, I thought I was probably better in year one in the PLL than year two. And like, I was flipped in like the rankings or whatever. So like, I think I, you know, had more to work on after last year than, you know, I did in the first. So it's, you know, it's like, I have a lot of perspective on it. I've been lucky to like have that, you know, be in that conversation for a few years. And I think like, I remember it being cool and then was just like, okay, what's next? Like I didn't feel like, oh wow, here I am. Like I finally accomplished it. Like nothing else to kind of work on. If anything, it just like kind of makes you want to like continue to add different layers and whatnot. So I don't mean to dodge it too much, but like, that is, you know, kind of how I've felt about it. And, you know, it's just all about like the next step and how I can kind of continue to get better.
That's perfect. And like you said, you know, you're a humble superstar. I think everyone's always said that about you. I said it was going to be the last question. I have one more. Give me 30 seconds. Just like, you're to this podcast, you're probably already a lacrosse fan. But it's a holiday weekend. Why tune in again to PLL Lacrosse?
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's nonstop action. You know, I think it's like, coincidentally, I'm I don't want to say best players in the world because I just kind of made fun of that, the use of that. But you know, it's like top notch athletes, you know, slinging the ball around. The game is really fast. It doesn't stop all that often. It's really physical, and like this year especially, anything could happen. You know, we saw that last week. You know, the Chargers so far have been really successful, but you know, we're going to be in two battles this week. Like every game is going to be entertaining. Every game is going to have great players on both sides of the ball. And I think it's well worth your hour and a half to tune into whatever games. And I think they're even more fun live. So if you're listening in from Long Island and you're not planning on attending any of the games, I would try to make an effort to get over there and kind of experience it firsthand, and be part of an awesome atmosphere.
Is Tom Schreiber, the best in the world, arguably, even if he doesn't want to admit that he is. Great interview with him and his Archers play, like we said, Friday at 7 p.m. versus the Chrome, and July 12:30, Whip Snakes versus Archers. That's the game that I think a lot of people have had circled on the calendar for a long time here when you looked at this PLL season. Let's take a brief step back, and Kevin, we'll start with you. One away from the prior weekend, from week 3 at Homewood Field, what's your main point coming out of that week?
Yeah, I think Tom touched on it a lot. It's any given day, anyone can kind of show up and lay an egg. You saw with the Water Dogs in the second half, I don't want to steal Big Cat's thunder, but I mean, he can yell at them. But that effort was awful. They just kept dropping all those passes and left the field early to let that Gittleman two-pointer go was not good, not a good look. And then you see teams like the Chrome show up the next day and put it all together. So I think it's a lot of matchups decide this league, like our good friend Kyle Devitt always says. But it's also who shows up and who's focused and kind of hungrier to get that win.
Chris, on you.
Yeah, so I think a lot of what we saw this past weekend is a lot of these games are going to be decided by depth and good GM moves during the week. They really started, especially, when you're seeing these teams playing twice in any given weekend, an injury, you don't want one injury to completely wipe out your team's effectiveness. And along the same regard, the season moves so quickly. If you have, a player or two that just they're not producing, you're going to have to get rid of them quickly or sort of reassign them to a different role. And, I feel like this season is more about taking emotions out of it for a lot of these coaches, who maybe you can't have like a guy, a lot of coaches will have, oh, he's my guy. I know him from, when we played, 3 years ago together or something like that, but you really can't afford to keep leashes that long. So I think a big thing we saw this weekend were a lot of guys getting hurt and rosters being rearranged. A big part of the Chrome victory were guys who, maybe you didn't pencil in originally as being difference makers for them, but they picked them up during, either draft or offseason, or like midweek moves or something like that. And you got to construct whatever you can to get the job done. So I think they're a prime example of that.
You see it this week. There's a lot of roster moves have happened. A lot of them maybe not, preferred ones. Not the coach pulling the plug, but there's a lot of injuries that have taken place. Zed Williams is questionable. Matt Rambo is out. First out for this weekend. That was just kind of a new thing that's just kind of happened. Kind of mysterious circumstances there, but he will not be playing for the Whip Snakes this weekend. But let's look at the first game. From Friday night, that game's going to be on Peacock, and it's kind of the teams that when you look at, like, if you're doing a power rankings based on like teams that are upward trajectory, that Chrome was a team that different circumstances though. Chrome's a team that a new identity, where Archers are a team that maybe has had the same identity, but it's just been forged over time and strengthened. Their offense and core group that they have. Kevin, when you look at this game, what's going to be the kind of key to success for either team?
Yeah, it's got to start with kind of the Chrome defense. Just to plug my own story coming on insidelacrosse.com probably this morning if you're hearing this. Check that out. It'll be – this is Chrome group. A lot of the seniority kind of leadership has been together since the Rattlers days, and they formed a great team culture, and that's got to translate into the defensive end with two of their top guys going down before essentially the whole season starts with Jesse Bernhard and JT Giles-Harris, and Mike Manley is going to have to buckle up and get some help from Barclay and the whole defensive group with, I mean, Grant Amant's been tearing the league apart passing wise. 5 points a game, leads the league scoring average. So just their skip passes are like being field level for the first time for a PLL game on Saturday at Homewood was just amazing, because my neck is still recovering from whiplash from trying to keep up with their involvement. It's pretty incredible what they're able to do. So I think it'll come down what to hold the Whipsnakes to six goals is a great feat even without Zed and Rambo. So we'll see what they're able to do against Archers.
Yeah, I'm interested in watching the other side. The Archers defense has been unsolvable. You know, Adam Gittleman is just putting up record numbers in the cage right now. And, you know, I think just by looking at the draft, you knew it was going to be a solid close defense. Going out and getting Graham Hossack, Warren Jeffrey, adding them to Matt McMahon, it just, you know, I think it's been working even better than you could have reasonably assumed, you know, just because the offenses are so good, you know. But, I mean, they've been phenomenal. And, you know, Chrome had a difficult matchup last week, and this is certainly not easier, you know. They found a way to score a ton of goals off what is ordinarily a very solid Whipsnakes close defense, Kyle Bermler and Cage, and now they have to kind of maybe even step up and do better than they did last weekend. So, you know, it's like knocking down a brick wall and finding another brick wall right behind it. The real question is going to be if they can actually do that again, maybe on a more difficult setting.
And I'll skip ahead a little bit to the Sunday, the last game of the weekend, the Sunday afternoon game. The Chrome have a really tough weekend. This one Sunday afternoon. And, you know, our first week doing this, Kevin, you know, and Child said, you know, the Atlas are going to be really good this year. And I think you're seeing that the Atlas are going to be a top half of the league kind of team. And, you know, it's the same boat that the Archers are in. But, like, you know, they're playing basically an amazing night. And then they have to turn around and play an opponent that is hungry, something to prove, but also has proven to be talented and much better than, you know, people realized or people expected in the Atlas. That's quite a weekend for the Chrome. And the Atlas is a team that, you know, they are, what is their identity now, you know, kind of since they've revamped and had a few weeks to figure themselves out? Kevin, how do you kind of address, like, what are the Atlas right now?
Yeah, I think they're a young team that, I mean, once the season continues to progress, they're only going to get better and better with Jeff Teat. Chris predicted it last week, saying it's going to take him a game to kind of get up to pace. He hasn't played in a year and a half, and coming right into a league that's a lot faster than anything he's ever been used to is going to get some taking used to. But seven goals in the next game, obviously, you know, he's got the talent. So most of those goals, I feel like, came off ball or in transition. So expect him to maybe carry a lot more with this offense, and that'll be a treat. You know, him drawing the eyes of the defense is always going to be fun to watch for the fans. So I've been really impressed by their defense. Michael Rexrode held Lyle scoreless, which is no easy feat, considering only that's happened one other time in his field career. So, and also Danny Logan. Danny Logan's been amazing at the shorty position. So I think they've got some young pieces all over the field that they're putting together, and it's only going to continue to improve.
Chris, with
this is going to be, like kind of like you mentioned, this is a very difficult weekend for Chrome, you know, especially coming off of kind of seeing, you know, we'll see if it sticks, but it looked like a new identity out of them. As far as generating the offense a little bit differently, Colin Heacock in a far more featured role coming out of the midfield. Jackson Morrell has been pretty much a consistent presence there, but, you know, adding Tommy Palasek to this, and now you take that team and they've got to play twice in the same weekend. You know, we talked to Tom Schreiber about what that feels pacing wise and everything like that, but, you know, still it's very difficult. You know, their team that, you know, if you do subscribe to the notion of, you know, momentum, getting a team going or something like that, they're coming off of a very big high. But the Atlas are also in that same boat, and they don't have another game that weekend. So you're kind of seeing two kind of freight trains going straight at each other. So it's kind of a good opportunity to see which of the two teams is maybe for real as far as turning a corner goes, and kind of shaking off what was a rough start to their season.
Yeah, and it's funny that, like, you know, the way that you put it, like, it is an opportunity, you know, for the Chrome particularly. I think this is like the, at least if I was Coach Zan, like, that's what I'd be telling my players. Like, you know, this isn't, you know, it is obviously, it's a tall task in front of us, but it's an opportunity. If we get two wins right now, or if we even get one win against either of these teams, like, we're for real. We're in the hunt, you know, versus, like, you know, I don't know, just try to take the positive out of it. You know, this is a way to, like, you can build a lot from this weekend. This could be the weekend that, like, you look back on in week 9, you know, when we're going to playoffs here, that this was where the Chrome became the Chrome. And this is kind of where, you know, we became who we are. Saturday's a weird day for the games in terms of, like, it's four teams that just need to win. And so it's Redwoods versus Water Dogs, Cannons versus Chaos. I don't really, like, you know, I don't feel like I know any of those teams. I felt like the first weekend with the Redwoods, I feel like, oh, they're a team that's going to just gut out all these wins. The Water Dogs, I thought they were a team that kind of, you know, in that week 2 turned a corner, they found its identity with Ben Reeves as kind of the quarterback after, you know, losing Michael Sowers and, you know, so I thought that I knew them, but apparently I did not. Chaos, I don't think I've understood who they are the entirety of their existence. And then Cannons, like, is just a team that, like, I just don't understand why they haven't won more than they have. So Saturday is, like, really intriguing to me. Kevin, like, what are you looking for on Saturday? Both those games are on, well, the Redwoods Water Dogs is the NBC game, so that's on NBC Maine. So that's going to be the one that the casual fan is going to see. And then the next game is on NBC Sports Network. Like, what is your main thing that you're looking for on Saturday with those games?
Yeah, like you mentioned, Cannons have been just so close. They're 3 losses all by 1 goal, which is pretty incredible. I had them power ranked at 7, and you're telling me, excuse me, like, oh, that looks low. And it definitely does, but 1-3 record can only go so far, you know, but they're coming up against a 1-3 team against the Chaos. It'll be, I think, a good opportunity for them to prove that they are good and they are this team that doesn't always lose these close games. I think, I don't think that one goes down to the wire. I think they pull away late. But, yeah, I'm interested in seeing the resolve of this Cannons team, especially Lyle coming off a goalless outing. I think he goes off for sure.
So, you know, I looked that up because I was wondering what happens the game after Lyle Thompson gets shut down. You know, because I think the assumption would be, oh, you know, he is going to, you know, take it out on the next guy, you know. But I don't think that's how Lyle Thompson works, you know. I'm not sure he's operating with this sort of a freight trade of hostility, you know, out for vengeance for what Michael Rexroad did to him. The last time it happened, I think he had like 1-1 or something the week after he was shut out last time. And then obviously he has since scored a ton of points. But there wasn't a big rebound. It certainly could happen this week. But I was wondering the same thing, if there's going to be some sort of motivational factor. I would not count on him being the guy carrying that. You know, this is for what Michael Rexrode did to me. Kind of payback situation. But that being said, I think the Cannons really have to win this game. And I don't mean necessarily like from a, or else they're out of the playoffs hunt sort of thing, but just like, if you are the kind of team that for whatever reason keeps putting up these one goal losses, you're just barely losing. Look, they're a good team. I don't think anybody's going to say they're bad, you know, or that the players they have are bad. It's just not a good team. You're not hearing that about them at all. But if you just keep losing, you really got to beat another team that has lost a significant chunk of their games as well. You know, like you're probably not going to bounce back in the game against the Archers, right? Or, you know, we'll see who's on the Whipsnakes at the time, but that's probably not going to be their bounce back the next time they see them or something like that.
Yeah, because you lose the Chaos, it's like almost time to panic.
Right, it's like, okay, you're convincing us there are problems.
Scoring 17 goals without Lyle scoring at all. Like, they're hitting on a lot of cylinders, they're just not finishing it.
Right, so. I think they're getting a lot of benefit of doubt because they are producing, you know, on offense, and they look good. So, you know, we can definitely say, oh, you know, the ball bounces this way, the ball bounces that way. They don't lose these games. Maybe they're 2-2. Maybe they're undefeated. Who knows? But if they come out and just lose to a team that we have seen not produce as consistently, then it's like, okay, you kind of, your line of credit is no longer extended. You know what I mean? I don't know if they're concerned about it, but I think as far as the general public goes, this is a game that could really sour them on the Cannons if they can't come out strong and consistent throughout this game.
It would also be pretty brutal. So Rabel's 2 points away from the all-time points record, again, that he broke with as a Lizard, and Junior unretired, and now he's going to break Junior's again. So if he gets 3 points and they lose, that's going to be brutal. So I don't think that's going to happen. I think Cannons win by 3-4 goals in this one.
I think so. Well, I think like context of a lot of this conversation about these games this weekend is who is the best team. Like, we haven't brought that up, but I feel like that's like kind of the like underlying question to all of this. I was really interested in the moves this weekend. In terms of the roster moves, what the Cannons are going to do with their game day roster. They added Tim Edwards as one of the people that they added from this week in kind of roster moves. And then also Chrome and TJ Camizio, who was on the Whips reserve roster and just couldn't get in the lineup. I don't know. I feel like, is it me or is your D tandem like the most important decision that you can make as a GM heading into these games?
It's definitely up there. Yeah.
Because it is the position now
with Camizio.
Yeah.
Franco's on a tear. He's been awesome. And Will Halls is obviously amazing. So, yeah, I agree with that take. Because you see with teams like Chaos, they kind of struggle with that position. Some of the approaches for how good Ian McKay not ideal on that end of the field. And then Redwoods, the whole Kevin Unterstein signing didn't look like the answer. So yeah, I think that's a really good take. Definitely the shorties deserve some recognition, some love.
Yeah, because I feel like that Cannons Chaos game is basically going to be like whose shorties get exploited more. Which, I mean, I think you could argue that's what every
– yeah.
Percent. But I think in particular, that's really what this game comes down to.
Yeah, I think this season has really been sort of a line has been set between like good defensive midfielders and defensive midfield liabilities. You know, like I can't recall seeing just a split where I'm watching games. And if you don't have a good defensive midfielder, it gets ugly real quick. And if we know it by watching these games, you know, the team you're going against definitely knows it. And they're just pulling them out and exploiting them left and right. It's been a very tough season for some of these guys. And that's why I think you're seeing a lot of roster shuffling in that position. Something I'm noticing that I'm not as familiar with, you know, there's like taking a D pole or an LSM who isn't playing with the pole at the time. And they're just saying like Ian McKay going out there sometimes with a short stick, or Eli Salama last game. Hey, go play with a short stick. You know, we need some help up top, you know, just has footwork and can push a dude. They're going to have you try it just because the position is so pivotal in this game.
I think a take I just thought of, so let me know if it makes sense. Like, the offensive talent, I think, has surpassed – I don't think the short stick defensive midfield talent is close to catching up with the depth of offensive talent that they have to cover in this league. What do you guys think about that take?
I think that's true, but I don't think it's the – I think there's more to it than that, in the sense that with specialization of the sport, I think that short stick D midi is not like a one size fits all position as it might be assumed. And with the limited number of rosters, like, you want a Ryan Conrad who's good on wings and who can ball, but like that doesn't necessarily mean a guy who can do that isn't necessarily your best defensive midfielder. That's a guy who can get ground balls and can push offense. But they're like, you just get these two spots on the roster for him. So, like, how do you get all of that into, you know, how do you get three or four guys worth of people into two roster spots on your team? And sometimes that can backfire on you, and sometimes it doesn't. So I think it is, like, I think what you're saying is true, but I think this is totally the, like, the flex point of the roster limitations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
And also, like, I wonder – so this weekend you saw – past weekend, you saw the Cannons do two face-off guys, which was, like, I think it was the first time in the league and, like, the league as a whole in a really long time, some face-off guys, which just shows, like – I mean, it seems like – I don't know. It seems crazy not to have – look at, like, where are you going to make your cuts on your roster? That's where it has to be, and you just kind of have to go with that guy. I really do not envy the DMs in terms of, like, the week-to-week decisions that have to be made. And I do think that, like, this is maybe an area where PLL, where, you know, I think rightfully so, the league has gotten a lot of flack for, like, kind of the transparency of, like, what goes into building and, you know, roster moves and, you know, how even the roster constructed to begin with. But, like, all that being said, and there's a lot of that, this year they have made that something that is a really intriguing piece of information week to week, that they have, you know, done a better job of publicizing and making front of mind for everyone. That's become a storyline that is very interesting talking point heading into these games.
100%.
It probably goes hand in hand with the gambling sort of focus, right? Like, I feel like if they're not at least obligated to provide a little more disclosure, they're probably at least motivated to do it, right? I mean, you know, I'd be far less inclined to put some money down knowing that, you know, maybe – you know, a half an hour before a game, a guy may or may not show up, and they're, you know, they're not going to tell me until he reaches the field or something like that. So, I mean, I think, you know, I don't know the rules and regulations behind it, but I feel like they're definitely feeling the pressure that they have to be a little more forthcoming, a little more formal. But in the same regard, there's certainly avenues in which they're not. You know, I think you mentioned Connor Kearst. is kind of a prime example of that right now. And, you know, I don't really have a great answer for what they're supposed to do. I don't know why he's not.
By the way, was one of the, like, just all the things out of, like, completely out of the player's control that he can't make the game.
That's right, right. I feel like the additional words almost made it more vague than if they had used fewer words. You know, like if you just
right.
said,
well, might as well say, yeah.
Okay, but it's like due to, you know, circumstances beyond his control. So then I start thinking, well, what's, you know, what can't he control? But, you know, like who is controlling it if not him? You know, is he out of the country for some reason? Did, you know, then you start thinking about a sort of, you know, what motivates them to say that it's not within his control to be there. So I don't know why that was the statement they decided to go with. I found it odd.
I would say the only thing, the biggest gripe they do have to remedy maybe is the restricted roster. There's two players every week, I found out this past week when compiling the list of eligible players to be picked up by other teams after three straight games on reserve rosters. Apparently Peter Dearth was not one because he was restricted on a week where they didn't have a doubleheader and their social team only post when the restricted roster, which is only two players, when they have a doubleheader. So putting that every week, I don't think would be too much more of an effort, two extra names. But yeah, more of that transparency just goes a long way for the fans and definitely the gambling aspect, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the cost of popularity. You know, the more popular the league gets, the more eyes are going to be on the, you know, sort of smaller scale elements, you know, and this is, there were a lot of people who were very curious about this stuff in the MLL days, but, you know, the growth of the sport just means that more people are going to be focused. And, you know, where was this guy last weekend? Where is he? You know, like you said, what's Peter Dearth? How come he is or isn't available? You know, they're going to just face more scrutiny and not even like in a negative aspect, but people are more curious.
Yeah, it's good that people are.
Yeah, that's a good sign. You know, it's a sign that people are curious about the league and, you know, curious about the roster moves and things like that. And it's definitely not going to be enough to just be like, you know, he's not there. Don't worry about it. You know, or, you know, this guy has a medical. He, you know, maybe he'll be back next week. Maybe he won't. You know, other leagues, you know, is, and I never know when we should or shouldn't compare PLL to say like, you know, the NBA or something like that, but there would have been countless other reports if someone were missing for some reason, or somebody wasn't going to be at a game, or, you know, somebody had gone to the hospital or whatever, there'd be, you know, countless outlets and, you know, league sources and things like that. Just kind of on top of that sort of thing. And I'm not entirely sure that we're completely privy to and comfortable with tossing that kind of stuff into the public eye. I think that's kind of something that we have to almost discuss and, you know, look at ourselves and, you know, the league as a whole and see what they come up with as well about, you know, kind of going a little more hand in hand with the public on some of these moves and inner workings.
Now, with that being said, you know, I think that the Whipsnakes are the team this week that is, like, when we're talking about roster construction, they're the team that is most affected by injuries, obviously. But maybe what you think of the Whipsnakes in terms of, like, you know, missing Zed, potentially missing Zed, and definitely missing Rambo, you know, there's a lot of spotlight on how good this team can be this week. And I pulled up the betting lines just now. So Archers are -1.5, Whipsnakes are +1.5 this week. So it's essentially a toss-up in terms of the betting lines for this game. But given the knowledge of the Whipsnakes roster limitations and the Archers, you know, consistency of roster, I guess, so to speak, who are you putting your money on? And then the over-under is 27.5. So Kevin, I'll start with you. We'll post these on Instagram as we get into the weekend. But you know, this kind of discussion about rosters and rosters being affected this weekend really got me going on this. So Kevin, we'll start with you.
No, yeah, it's interesting. Cause I can't remember. Did Tierney play last week? I don't think he – I can't remember if he dressed, but I guess if he's available, you send him down to attack Rambo spot. He gets more touches. You saw the magic he can do at Hofstra and being back on the island this weekend. It's a good opportunity to show back some of that magic that he really hasn't got an opportunity to do so far, because you look at their midfield, they're struggling to beat their guys with a lot of their offenses focused on the invert game. So we'll see how that works out, but smash the under, I would say. I think the Whip Snakes defense bounces back, but the Archers are definitely going to cover and I think certainly win.
Now, remind me again what that over-under was.
27.5.
That is a lot.
That's a lot of points. I mean, no matter who's playing, that's a lot of points.
Yeah, that's just a lot of points for a game. I would be inclined to also take the under, and I'm not going to bet against the Archers until they give me a reason to bet against them. The Whipsnakes offense, you know, I trust that Jim Stagnita has enough time to figure out how to get the best of what the roster is going to have available to him. I'm just going to assume they're going to operate under the belief that Zed isn't going to be available. And then if he is, it's like, you know, a pleasant bonus that they will have him there. I'm going to be very curious to see where they are going to get their points. It would definitely be cool story-wise, you know, if Ryan Tierney does take this opportunity to step up and just drop a billion goals on Long Island in his return. Maybe it'll happen. I don't know. We haven't gotten to see him much, but, you know, you join the Whipsnakes, they don't need that much help, you know, generally speaking. You're not looking for attack help or anything like that. The midfield, I don't know how the productivity is going to go from there as well. We haven't seen a sort of big outburst from Mike Shanachek. And something I've been thinking about, which kind of speaks to Mike Shanachek, I'm also not positive that this league has two-point shooters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, if you look at, like, the NBA or something like that, not to completely derail this, but you would say, you know, oh, well, I need a team with some three-point shooters. Let me go get, you know, Steph Curry or whatever. Dame Lillard can shoot from half court. As far as productivity goes this year versus the bubble versus the first year, I feel like the guys who we know to be the distant shooters aren't year in and year out putting up those numbers from distance. Like, I'm not sure if there are Kyle Dixons and people like that who are just going to show up and give you that amount constantly every single season. So I'm not even sure if Mike Shanachek is going to be the answer as far as scoring a ton of points with a long distance shot. So I would be inclined to think, like we were talking about earlier, they're going to have to try to find some sort of short sticks to exploit. It's not that easy when it comes to the Archer short sticks. You know, they are tall and physical people. You know, you're going to get Dominique Alexander or Mark McNeil or Latrell Harris has been, good in transition. So they have a lot of weapons on both sides of the ball, even when you're talking about that defensive midfield. So I'm curious to see how they get it done. And also, like I said, Gretelman's been nuts in cage. So they have a serious, serious challenge ahead of them.
One player who's been, or I think is going to be a huge two-bomb threat at the pro level for years to come, just removed from the unavailable to travel list, Trey Leclerc for the Archers. He's going to hit some bombs. Skip passes up to him. I'm looking forward to that. For the Whipsnakes, they'll need some, like, Erdenhart, or if Chaney can get that righty on the run like he did against the Cannons to go, then they're in good shape. But
if the line was anything but minus 1.5, I wouldn't be taking the Archers. if that makes any sense. It's going to be that close. I think it's going to still be all of the reasons. There's a lot of reasons why the Archer should win by more, but the reason that the Whipsnakes will do a very close margin is just because that's who, and Stagnita is the best coach in the league. And they are, even Rambo and Zed being irreplaceable, like, they're the team that, like, oh, you need us to gut it out for 2 weeks? We will until you guys get back. I feel very confident in that team to do it. So, like, I think it's win, but I think it's going to be an Archer's win that's going to be very, very close.
Yeah, that's a good take. I'm also upset Rambo's out. I had a scheduled tweet for Sunday morning, like, re-upping my Rambo cover story when I talked to Coach Resch about getting Warren Jeffrey and Graham Hossack specifically for this game, for the Zed Rambo matchup. So that'll have to wait until semifinals, probably.
Well, what is it? Thick boy, what did he say?
Yeah.
At the end of the thing, it's going to have to wait for another week.
Right.
Unfortunately, it's going to have to wait till Minnesota to get thick boy Matt Rambo back. But I'm looking forward to it. I was last week on vacation, and, you know, I've been catching up with the games. I actually have a game on within I get them and just scored that goal right now in terms of what I'm watching on my TV. But I'm pumped to get back into it. This has been as excited as I've been about pro lacrosse. I'm a longtime pro lacrosse fan. This is as excited I've been about pro lacrosse for a very – so I'm definitely looking forward to this weekend. And I hope all of you who are listening are. And to bring you another PLL Happy Hour, thanks to Tom for coming on. And thanks to Chris and Kevin for and talking lacrosse for a few hours.
Yeah, happy 4th, everyone. Let's enjoy the games.
Yeah, see you out there.